Good afternoon and welcome to Real Life, Real Relationships. I'm Melissa Cox here with Jonene McKinsey, the president and founder of the Center for Relationship Education. Jonene, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Melissa. How are you today?
Well, I am doing great. I'm enjoying the heat and the craziness called summer.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are complaining about the heat, but I never complain about the heat.
No, all of the things that are going on and around, but it's been a crazy 4th of July week and fun celebrating the independence, but I'm ready for everything to calm down a little.
You bet. And we're just hoping that we can see some relief with these fires. And it's so hard in Colorado to see this. Last night I was smelling it through the window. It was like really felt close.
Yeah, it is getting there. And so we just have to, hopefully they can get those under containment. Well, today, Jonene, because I think about all the things of this week, we're going to talk to a couple about stress in marriage and what does that mean? And so I'm excited to meet Priscilla Hunt and her husband, who will be our guest, and they're going to just give us some insights on how stress impacts couples and their relationships. So I thought that would be fun since we kind of are in that midpoint of summer and stress seems to be creeping in.
Yeah, you know, and so when you think about how stressed you are and how you just snap an answer or you've got a very short fuse when you're under stress, well, who do you take that out on? You take that out mostly on your partner. Sometimes you take it out on your kids, sometimes you take it out on your dog, but you know, our closest relationships seem to be ones that get the brunt of our stress. Why? Because we can. Because they are the closest ones to us, and it's really not fair, but that's just the way life is.
Well, and what I love about the Hunts and what they do is just kind of the strategies that you teach as well, the strategies to how to deal with those things. I think so often in our culture, we've talked about this so much that we just expect we should know something. We expect we should know how to diffuse stress. We expect that it really doesn't impact us, but it does.
Yes, and one of the things that we do in our workshops is teach people, okay, you're dealing with all the stress, there's all this drama going on. Okay, what do? Time out. Let's take a time out. One of the things I do with my husband is I know he's got a short fuse. I know he's stressed at work or he's got some, you know, pain or whatever. And I just say, you know what? You said something to me recently that was a little hurtful. Would you like a mulligan?
Wow.
Would you like a do-over? Would you like an etch-a-sketch moment? Because I know that the intent of his heart is not to hurt me. The intent of his heart is he's a good man. He's good. And I know he loves me. And I feel real confident in that, but I say, okay, time out. Let's do a do-over. Let's start over, and you can make it really fun. That's just a strategy that we teach in many of our workshops.
Well, I think that strategy, I think it is those strategies that are so important because so often we expect that knowledge to be just natural, and it's not. It's, you know, we have to learn these behaviors. We have to learn how to communicate well. We need to learn how to resolve conflict. We need to learn how to tell someone, I'm under stress, and I need to learn how to cope with this and how to cope effectively. And, you know, earlier in the year, we were talking about alcohol and drug use being up in our the older sect of our population. And I just kind of think the stress of the economy, the stress of fires burning around your city, the stress of, you know, your house payment and different things, those things can cause a relationship to collapse because, you know, it's sometimes easiest not to be nice to that person closest to you.
Right. And so you lash out, you feel like things are bubbling up. And so there is a skill and a process by which you have to verbalize your feelings. And you have to have emotional safety to do that. And on this program, I know that I've talked about this until our listeners are like, okay, we get it. Emotional safety is important in a relationship. But, you know, there are times when babies, you know, are crying all night long and you're tired. There's times when there's a surgery and there's pain associated with surgery, or there's frustration because of a loss of a job, or there's payments that are not being paid. There's too much month at the end of the money. And so therefore, everybody gets really kind of sideways. And to say out loud, I am under stress and I need for you to be graceful with me, or I need for you to allow me to continue to just ventilate so that I can diffuse some of the stress, is a very important thing to do. Now, one of the things I find so interesting in relationships, as I hear this all the time, I am being so passively aggressive, you know, that whole passive aggressive behavior. That is somebody that doesn't know how to say, this is what I need. So you know what they do? Yeah, it's okay.
Eeyore.
They become Eeyore instead of Tigger. And I hate that more than anything. I hate it. I hate it with my colleagues. I hate it with my friends. I hate it with my, you know, husband. That whole passive, you know, and then they'll do something, you know, to kind of kick you under the table metaphorically, you know. So I say, you know what? Tell me what you need. Tell me what's on your heart. Talk to me. Because we can handle anything if we can talk about it.
Right. And I think that's important. But it goes back to those things we teach our little kids. Use your words. And so many people through the trials and triumphs of life will forget how to use their words. They don't feel empowered. They don't feel like they can. They have been rejected. They've been hurt. They've been wounded. And so they just stop trying, which makes passive aggressive. It makes it painful. You know, I do believe in relationships, it's better to share what's there so you can get past it. And stress, so much of it is that external stuff that's going on. And, you know, I was talking to someone just this week about relationships are meant to be helpful. They're supposed to help you get through things. It's to have someone to lean on. And if you can't lean on your spouse in the stressful times, you know, what's the purpose?
Right. Yeah. And also, we also have to have other supports in our lives. We can't just constantly dump everything on our spouse. In other words, you know, sometimes people say they get married so that somebody can meet their needs. Well, hopefully that day is over. Hopefully that day is over, because nobody really can meet your needs. Yes, we can share life together. We can be partners. But nobody is going to move into your deficit and complete you. Do you remember that phrase?
I complete you.
I complete.
You complete me.
You complete me. I mean, yes, it's very cute. And when they said it, they're adorable. You know, Zellniger or whatever her name is, and Tom Cruise. Yeah. They couldn't have been cuter. But that is such a ruse. That is such a falsehood that somebody would complete you. If you don't have it to give, you cannot give what you don't have.
Well, and I like that. I like that we as individuals have to be strong and confident and have our weaknesses. We need, if you haven't figured out your problems, it's time to get counseling. If you have weaknesses, it's time to build strength. Because if you don't, no one's going to do it for you. And how do you build healthy relationships when you yourself aren't healthy? And I think that's a challenge for so many people. And I think that's what the benefit of programs like the Center for Relationship Education offers, whether it's your weight training curriculum for teens or your Colorado Healthy Marriage Project. I think all of those things help us. We're going to have to take a quick break, but let me tell you real quick about Greg and Priscilla Hunt. They are the founders and they work with bettermarriages.org. And if you want to find them there, you can. But they have a program that basically focuses on training couples on how to resolve conflict and how to do different things. They're national speakers. They have they're specialists in marriage enrichment, and they have been married 35 years and I guess have been involved in marriage education since they said I do back in 1976. So they are people who have a passion for healthy marriages and want to do great things and share our passion for healthy marriage. So they are going to be speaking at an upcoming NARMI conference that you are a part of. And I just thought they'd be a great group to talk to about being healthy. So you're listening to Real Life, Real Relationships. I'm Melissa Cox here with Jonene McKenzie, and we'll be right back after these messages with the Hunts to talk about stress in marriage. Welcome back to Real Life, Real Relationships. I'm Melissa Cox here with Jonene McKenzie and our special guest, Greg and Priscilla Hunt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, we're glad to be here.
Well, I am glad you guys are here. I have seen on some different conference brochures that you guys are just talking around the country. And one of the subjects just caught my mind. And I was telling our listeners earlier that the issue of stress and its impact on couples. And that's why I wanted you to be on the show today. So tell me how you all got into marriage education.
Well, we have been married 36 years. And early on in our relationship, we discovered a retreat, a marriage retreat, that was sponsored by Association for Couples in Marriage Enrichment. That organization is now doing business as Better Marriages. But we went to the retreat and learned great communication skills and how to deal creatively with conflict to make it work for us instead of against us. and we were hooked personally. And then professionally, Greg was pastoring a church and was always looking for opportunities to help couples and provide resources for couples. And this organization is where we turned in terms of being able to provide program and education to help couples grow and have an intentional relationship.
Yeah, so it was great for our relationship. It was great for leading others. And then we got into it, started developing our skills as a leader couple through the services provided, the training provided by Better Marriages. And boy, it was off to the races from that point.
It was.
Well, that just sounds amazing. One of the things, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer that stress impacts relationships. But from your perspective, I mean, what kind of role does stress have in relationships, and how does it kind of sabotage people?
Right. Well, I'll tell you, it is in some ways self-evident, but I think when stress hits us, it's such a visceral experience. We're not always real conscious and mindful about what's happening to us. We find ourselves short-tempered. We find ourselves distracted. There are a variety of things that go with stress, and as you look at the symptoms of stress itself, you can see immediately how it could impact couple closeness, how it could create unintentional emotional wounds, how we could find ourselves distanced from one another or dealing with unresolved anger, hurt feelings. All of those things have to be taken seriously.
Well, and it's interesting, just speaking from our relationship standpoint, I'm a very task-focused person. And that isn't always the best thing for a relationship. And so, you know, through the years, we've learned to monitor that, and I've become much more relational and less task-focused. But I do know that when I'm under stress, all bets are off. Whatever that tendency is my default mode. And so when I'm experiencing stress, it brings stress into the relationship because I'm not managing my own stuff as well as I usually do under the best of circumstances.
Well, you guys have been married for quite a while, and have you seen, it seems to me that, has stress become more prevalent, or is life just faster? How have things changed in the 30 years you've been married? Do you see different sources of stress in people's life, or is it the same story, just a different verse?
Right. I think in some ways it's a universal experience, but there's no question but that Alvin Toffler's prediction about this kind of increasing pace of change would have a society-wide impact on us. Things are going faster and faster and faster, and as the speed of life increases, we get sucked into the treadmill of all that activity and live with a kind of underlying element of stress as a constant reality of our daily lives. You can't live in a suburban urban culture, for instance, and commute without dealing with the traffic and the stress created by traffic. And on the job, you've got deadlines and demands from those for whom you work, and it's hard to leave that behind when you come home. Parenting becomes more stressful because there are things to think about that we didn't have to worry about. I think of one simple thing. When I was in kindergarten, my mom said goodbye at the front door of the house, and I walked 1 mile through downtown Kirkwood, Missouri on my way to school.
Wow.
And you don't do that anymore.
No, you don't.
Well,
so
you know,
I think there are additional stressors on top of just the very common ones that we've always dealt with, and certainly technology plays into that. And I know for myself, I am rarely unplugged. I am always accessible. I'm always on my smartphone, always looking up information. It's almost like we are, with our access to information, we're just constantly bombarded with that stimulus. And we rarely take a break from it, even when we could.
We were at a conference recently. We actually asked people, how many of you would admit that you have your smartphone by your bedside at night and look at it before you go to sleep? And a disturbing percentage of those present admitted that they were still accessing information on smartphone as they were getting ready to so-called wind down.
There was a study done, just to aside on that, when there was a study done on how many times a minute the 20-somethings touch their smartphone. How many times do you think a minute somebody would touch their smartphone?
Oh, wow, that's an interesting one. What was it?
Yeah, 7 times a minute.
Mm. Goodness.
You know, and they're multitasking, and it's just, I don't think it's going away. So we got to figure out how to deal with that paradigm shift.
Exactly.
Yes. It was interesting. We were leading a workshop on stress with couples recently in Texas, and there was such a positive response to the workshop, which is really an indication that couples are under stress, and we know that. We don't always know what to do about it. And it was interesting. We started the workshop with the Life Event Stress Scale that gives a score for different major events in life, and you total your scores depending on what your circumstances have been within the last year or 2 years. And then it measures your level of stress. And as I was initially talking with Greg before we were leading the workshop, I was thinking, you know, I just scanned that stress scale, and I said, you know, I don't think I have very many of these. And then when I actually stopped with pencil in hand and gave it my attention and focused on it, I was over the top, you know, in stress events in my life. And so there just wasn't a self-awareness, because I think we tend to just take things in stride, and it isn't until we have a major health issue or an emotional issue that bubbles up and we see it for what it is.
Well, I just pulled that stress scale up on the internet, and it just cracks me up. Christmas and vacation are on the stress list.
Yes.
Changing your diet, having changing your sleeping habit, changing your church, school, and recreation activities, moving, trouble at work. There are a lot of things on here that people may not think would be stressful. Trouble with your in-laws.
Right. Yeah, everyday things that add up. They start piling up, and what's happening is that the body is reacting to being on alert, and the cumulative effect of the body's being on alert is to begin to see these troubling symptoms.
But something as simple and as wonderful as a holiday, we don't think of that necessarily as stressful, but when you stop and consider the additional pressure of buying gifts or cooking for family or, heaven forbid, having family visit with all of their dysfunction, you know, it is, even the good things can be stressful.
I might also mention that when we start talking about couple stress, there are some variables here. There are times when Priscilla is dealing with stress over something in her work world or life, and I'm in a support mode for her. There are other times when it's reversed. I'm the one dealing with stress, and she's in a support mode to me. Then there are times when both of us are dealing with those things separately but simultaneously and managing our relationship under those circumstances. And then yet another variable is the times when what we're experiencing is stress related to the same thing. We're sharing that over some topic in our relationship or in the world we care about. And each one of those creates its own challenges in terms of how will I take responsibility for me? How will I care for self and care for Priscilla? How will we manage the challenges that come with these stressors and have a happy, healthy relationship?
You know, one of the things I was doing this past weekend was watching The Dog Whisperer.
Oh, yeah.
It's an incredible show, and it actually gives you a lot of insights into the human condition, because when these dogs are under stress, what do? They get aggressive, they bark, they bite, they pee on the floor, they mess inside the house. So my question is... we know that stress is a part of life, and what we want our listeners to hear, perhaps we can start when we come back from a break. But what, since stress is here to stay, and since these things on this list are part of the living, you know, you won't have stress if you're dead. You'll have stress if you're breathing. What can we do? I mean, the dog whisperer, his answer was boundary setting, keeping the dog safe, making them feel connected, you know, making them feel like there are consequences to behavior. So my question to you is, as experts in this area, if you could give us a kind of a listing of what kind of things can we do to mitigate this stress and at the same time keep our relationships healthy.
Great.
I would say just initially that we need to deal with our own stuff, so that I need to personally learn how to manage my stress. And that's going to impact the relationship. And then together we need to be able to talk about our stress and what we're experiencing, and problem solve that together.
Yeah, it begins with self-awareness and then taking responsibility for self, and then in the couple relationship to share that self-awareness and learn from the other person's awareness. There are times when Priscilla will see things in me that I don't see in myself, and it's only when she calls attention to it that I become aware of it, and the reverse is true as well.
And are you real happy about that when she does that?
No, not always, especially when I'm in the middle of stress. And in fact, one of the things we can talk about more are ways that Priscilla and I have contracted with each other to give each other permission at times to actually surface stuff that is not necessarily welcome at the time, but necessary.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break. And so one of the things I'd love to talk about when we get back was in Jonene's earlier question, were what are some of the signs and symptoms and how do people know that they need to maybe take care of it? And then how do you communicate effectively with your spouse about the stress? So when we get back, maybe we can cover those issues. You are listening to Real Life, Real Relationships. I am Melissa Cox here with Jonene McKenzie, and our guests today are Greg and Priscilla Hunt. And if you want to know more about the organization they work at, you can visit bettermarriages.org. If you want to know more about the Center for Relationship Education or our Colorado Healthy Marriage Project, please visit myrelationshipcenter.org. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Real Life, Real Relationships. I'm Melissa Cox here with Jonene McKenzie and our special guest today, Greg and Priscilla Hunt. They are with bettermarriages.org. And we were talking, y'all, before the break just about Jonene's analogy of how sometimes when we are stressed, we act like animals, which makes a lot of sense. But one of the questions I had for you all as she was going into that analogy is, what are some of our responses to stress? What happens? I saw on a sheet you sent to me that there are physical and mental and emotional and social aspects of that, which makes sense because that's what makes up whole people, is those five characteristics of life. But what do you all see as common denominators on people's responses to stress?
Yeah, you know, just at a mental level, sometimes when stress is high, we have problems with memory, we have difficulty making decisions, maybe more difficult to concentrate, we have a shortened attention span, there's misunderstandings that arise, poor judgment, inability to slow down the thought process, loss of objectivity. Those are some of the mental things that takes place when there's that kind of overstimulation, overdrive.
And certainly there are physical signs of stress as well, and we can identify with these: headaches, stomach aches, digestion issues in general, weight loss or weight gain. We can develop skin problems, rashes, eczema. We have a lack of energy. Sometimes we have insomnia, or the opposite, we sleep all the time. Nervousness, and so there are a lot of physical signs that can show us we're under stress.
Emotionally, I think we become really aware of what takes place. That's probably some of what's most evident when we're thinking about our reactions to stress. It could be loss of interest in hobbies or the fun things of life, shifts of mood, uneasiness, restlessness, frustration, shorter tempers, We could just be irritable, overly sensitive. It can lead to a kind of toxic anxiety that's just a constant anxious stew, fear of failure, depression, apathy, tearfulness. It's kind of feeling like we need to cry. And, you know, for some people, those are the kinds of things that send them to a doctor who prescribes meds that can treat the symptoms without necessarily getting at the underlying causes.
Well, and that's what I was thinking. It seems like these symptoms really can become self-fulfilling to help a person go from being stressed to depressed to not dealing with those stressors. And so while you can get medication, and for a lot of people that's beneficial, but unless you acknowledge and eliminate the stress, those things are just going to become repetitive.
Exactly.
Yes. And social signs of stress are almost an outgrowth of all of these other signs that we've been talking about. If you're feeling irritable, if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling cranky, if you have headaches and stomach aches and, you know, all of those things are going on, it is going to impact your social relationships. You may withdraw. In an extreme, you may become antisocial. You may be aggressive, angry, irritable. Well, who wants to be around someone like that? So you may lose some friends, you may lose contact, and you become more and more secluded and isolated. And you may be dealing with a lack of trust of people, negativity. So there are a lot of social, there are signs, but there are also outcomes.
Right. And you talked about boundaries at the outset of our time together. You were talking about the dog whisperer mentioning boundaries. Sometimes those boundaries get overridden. Somebody steps in to someone else's space in their anxious, stressed out need to control what's going on inappropriately.
So what do you all share? You know, I think about the stress and all of those things in a couple. You're sitting in a situation where you're seeing your spouse go through these things. What is it that a spouse should do or a significant other to help? Because I think about Jonene's question before the break. How do you feel when your wife tells you you're not doing the right or you're out of control or you're stressed? I mean, because I think about that conversation in my household and I think we communicate pretty good. But if I walked up to my husband and said, dude, you're stressed, he'd like be like, duh.
Right.
You know, of course I am.
I think the foundation for talking about that issue is caring for your spouse and caring for yourself. You know, we've indicated that when our partner is under stress, it does affect us and it does affect the relationship. And Greg and I have a very good understanding that we need to, before we point out to each other where we need to grow or learn or deal with our stress, that we need to really get our own head and heart in the right place, so that that's coming from a place of love and concern and care and support rather than criticism, frustration, you know, come on, get it together, pull yourself up by your bootstraps type of mentality.
Right. And, you know, one of the places to start is to have conversations in the cooler, calmer moments where, for instance, we can ask each other, when you are experiencing stress, what do I do that is helpful and what do I do that is not helpful? Having conversations before those kind of cauldron occasions is the best opportunity in a more relaxed, supportive environment to learn better about each other and be better positioned to respond constructively, creatively when those times come.
It always comes back to the fact that we can't read each other's minds. And I may think I know what's helpful when Greg's under stress, but unless I ask him that, I'm just guessing. And so it's really important, as Greg said, to have those conversations ahead of time and really educate ourselves about how we really can support.
You know, this reminds me of, Greg, what you're saying. When my kids would give me something to read, like they were in school and they would give me something to read, I automatically just took my red pen out and started checking it all and, you know, and giving them all kinds of reword this and this is a paragraph and this doesn't make sense. And they were very annoyed and they were very hurt by it all.
How about
that? You know, they just wanted me to read it, you know. And so what I did was, because this was becoming a pattern, and then they go, no, you can't read this. And of course, I want to be involved. So I said, okay, one, they were not stressed. And when they didn't have something to give me, I said, kind of like what you're saying, is when you give me a paper to read, what is it that you want me to do with it?
Yeah, perfect.
And sometimes they would say, well, sometimes I need for you to correct it and I need for you to edit it. And sometimes I need for you to just read it and tell me whether or not you think it's good or whatever. And this is what I need to hear from you. So each time they would give me something, I would check in. And that's the kind of thing that you're talking about.
Perfect. Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's not like there's one specific formula for what is helpful for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's very personal. It's related to our personalities, our temperament, our personal histories. And so having that kind of conversation, what's helpful for you, what's not helpful for you, takes each couple on its own personal couple journey.
Yeah.
Well, and that journey is something that I think sometimes we get stumbled on. And with those expectations, you know, what I loved you all saying is you can't read your spouse's mind. And after 35 years, you would think you could read each other's minds.
I think I can still, but I'm constantly corrected.
Life would be much simpler if we could, but the fact is we can't. So enter communication skills.
Well, and I think that is the key, is I think about that all the time, is we really have to learn. I told Jonine as we started today, you've got to learn to use your words. And so when we come back, I want to talk a little more about what people can do to understand and maybe some tools and some questions we can give our audience to help them analyze their stress. So we will. You are listening to Real Life, Real Relationships. I'm Melissa Cox here with Jonine McKenzie. And our guests today are Greg and Priscilla Hunt, and they are with BetterMarriages.org. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Real Life, Real Relationships. I'm Melissa Cox here with Jonine McKenzie. And our special guests today are Greg and Priscilla Hunt. If you want to know more about the organization they're with, you can visit bettermarriages.org. And if you want to know more about the Center for Relationship Education, please visit us at myrelationshipcenter.org or give us a call at 720-488-8888. Now, before the break, Greg and Priscilla, we were talking a little about just how reading each other's mind just doesn't happen. And one of the things I've been impressed with as we've been talking is just how well you all dance together and finish each other's sentences. And I think you can tell that you guys are in harmony just by the way you communicate and are finishing those things. And I think for so many of our listeners, they deeply desire to have that swaying dance that just is without any missteps. And one of the things I was hoping you could help our listeners with is what can they do to communicate effectively and to evaluate and ask the right questions in these stressful times?
You know, I want to repeat something Priscilla said earlier, which is that caring is foundational. I've got to care for myself and take myself seriously and not ignore my own needs, but I need to care for Priscilla. It is crucial to our relationship that we have regard for each other, and in our, you know, in the depths of our hearts, we really want the other person to win, and we want our relationship to win. And I can tell you, there is no win-lose when it comes to a marriage relationship. If one person wins and the other loses, both lose. It just isn't good for the relationship. So out of that comes the desire to understand one another, to get better at knowing what's helpful, what's not helpful, and then acting on it out of that caring spirit.
Well, communication is foundational to growing in any area. And when we think about the area of stress, it is inevitable that one or both of us will be under stress, and sometimes that bubbles up big time. And the best time to talk about it, Greg, as you mentioned, is not when you're in the heat of the stress, but it's when you're sitting out on the patio with a glass of iced tea and you're just, you've got your feet up and you're holding hands and you are relaxed. That's the time to strategize. And what I find is that couples often don't make time in their relationship to plan for growth. And, you know, when we are working with couples, whether it's in a workshop setting or one-on-one coaching environment, we want to help them understand not only the signs of stress and the sources of stress and the effects of stress, but we want them to begin exploring their own issues. What currently is stressing them? Put those down, you know, write them down, share them with each other. Oftentimes, couples are moving so fast through life that they're not even aware of what is stressing the other person.
And then while they're at it, it's crucial for them to ask the next question in self-awareness: how is stress currently affecting me? And how is stress currently affecting my partner? How is stress affecting our relationship? In those reflective circumstances, it is great to really quietly, thoughtfully assess what's actually going on, become more self-aware.
And then to look at patterns that they see in their relationship about how they typically behave under stress and how their partner typically behaves under stress. I mentioned that I can be very task-focused. I'm very organized and I'm very competent, and so I'm working, and when I'm under stress, my pattern is that I become more task-focused, and when I'm more task-focused, I'm less relationship-focused.
She can get very abrupt, and what's interesting mm-hmm. is that from my side, when I'm experiencing stress, I like to have more tenderness and compassion. So my default desire is just the opposite of what's coming out of her in the middle of her stress. And so we've had to talk about that reality. And there are times when we send up the flag for one another to say, hey, I see you're having stress. I'm experiencing stress. We know how we tend to act under stress. Let's just be sensitive and as supportive of one another as we can be under these circumstances. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't do that if we hadn't had these quieter moments of self-reflection and then couple sharing.
Well, here's my question, because obviously your kids are grown and out of the house. How did you do this when your kids were home and you were chasing your 12-year-old and your 15-year-old to their activities and life was going 90 miles an hour? Because I'm just assuming that that's how life is for people with kids, because it makes me feel better about my own life.
But absolutely.
How did you all manage that in the midst of managing your family and your busyness of life? Because I think for some of our listeners, it sounds great to sit on the porch and have an iced tea. And I keep thinking when you're talking, as long as that iced tea is not laced with something stronger, then you know you're having a relaxing moment.
Right.
Well, you know, we talk about the importance of developing an intentional relationship or a conscious relationship. And what we mean by that is that at every stage of the relationship, we need to be doing what we can to be growing and learning and supporting one another and that sort of thing. That may mean, you know, get the kids in the back seat, put their headphones on, put in their DVD in the minivan, and then have a conversation when you're driving on a road trip or driving to the soccer game. It isn't easy, but whatever a couple can do. In fact, we had a couple come to us a couple of years ago, and they had three young children, preschool. And they said, we don't have time to talk for 15 minutes every day about life and about our feelings and our desires and all of that. And they really problem-solved that because they understood the importance of doing that. And they figured out, well, the housekeeper comes, The nanny arrives at 7. They could go to Starbucks and have a cup of coffee before they go their separate ways. So there are always ways to find time to do these kinds of conversations.
Sometimes we just have to remind ourselves that if we can't find the bits of time where we can have these kinds of conversations, we end up using up a whole lot more time with the unproductive expressions of stress in anger and silence and these other processes. And most of us have places of time, whether it's turn off the television for an hour, or instead of going to a movie tonight for our time away on a baby's a parents' night out, let's get a quiet dinner and just use that time for getting back in touch with one another. These conversations related to stress don't have to be constant time absorbing discussions, but finding the place where you can on occasion reflect, evaluate, and renew your commitments in this score will pay huge dividends that actually lower stress in the long run.
And I do want to mention again the idea of self-care as a starting point. I need to understand what causes my stress and how I respond to that stress, what makes my stress worse, and what makes my stress better. And one thing that I found helpful was to write down 10 things that were life-affirming, stress-reducing activities that replenish me. Because day-to-day, I am not getting replenished, and that's when I become overwhelmed with stress.
Assuming alcohol and drugs and all of those things that people lean on do not qualify, and I like your word, life-affirming.
Well, let me give you an example.
Activities, because that's important for people.
It is important. Like an example, a couple of weeks ago, I was feeling very stressed, and I decided to go put on my walking shoes and hit one of the trails here locally. And I was walking, and I was walking by a stream, and there were trees, and it began to rain, and I could hear the rain in the treetops, but I wasn't getting wet. It was just one of those magical experiences. And I stopped, and I said, this, yes, I remember now, this replenishes me. This is what I need to do to deal with my stuff. And, you know, I put that on my list. I personally need to get outside. I need to get exercise. I need to be away from people. So it's important for us to think through what it is that's going to allow us to deal with our stress before we're able to really take that into the relationship and talk about it.
Well, and I can say that when Priscilla's taking herself seriously, like she just described, it pays immediate dividends for our relationship because she's a whole lot easier to be in relationship with when she's been replenished. That way, even if I don't know what the source of it is, I'm grateful.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about something that it just reminds me of this personality thing that we do, you know, because it is so like your personality, Priscilla.
Mm-hmm.
To make this list because you're a task and you're a list maker. But,
right.
You know, for people like me I'm not a list maker and I'm very forgetful and very spontaneous to the point of really being to a fault. And so for somebody like who our listeners might relate to, there are some listeners that might relate to how you do it. Mm-hmm. But then within your personality, for instance, I could say to my husband, what replenishes me is I need to pop my cork.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be able to raise my voice. I need to be able to emote a little bit without you getting so threatened.
It's the Italian in you.
Yeah, it's that Italian stuff. That expressive, you know, just let me pop my cork, let me say it out loud, and then I'll decompress. That is also, would you say that is, as long as you get permission to do so by your spouse.
Absolutely. In fact, that's a beautiful example of what we mentioned earlier about talking with each other about what's helpful to me. When I'm under stress, this is what I need from you. And when I'm under stress, this is not what I need from you. This is not helpful. that's a conversation to have.
Yeah, the nice thing about what you just described is that by talking about this is what I need to pop my cork, your husband understands, okay, when she does this, it's not directed at me. This is her blowing off steam. Well, I can manage my stress when she's emoting that way because I understand she needs that. Mm-hmm. And it changes the internal psychological dynamic by which your husband supports you through that process.
Well, you guys have just been amazing. It's hard to believe our program is almost over. One real quick, we've got about 30 seconds, and I was going to see if you could tell us about some of the ABCs of managing stress.
Yes. A, awareness. Be aware when you're seeing signs of stress in yourself, in your partner, and in your relationship.
The B is behavior. Follow through on the game plan that you've developed. Doesn't do much good talking about it if you're not going to put it into action.
C is celebration. Affirm and savor your progress. We sometimes, in our relationships, forget to celebrate.
And then finally, the D is debrief. Evaluate, continue developing the game plan. It's a moving target. Might as well acknowledge that. So A, awareness. B, behavior. C, celebration. D, debrief.
Well, wow. We have got to call it a day. Priscilla and Greg, thanks for being here. You've been listening to Real Life, Real Relationships. Until next time, we hope you live well, love well, and if you're married, do that well too.